continuing discussions on information loss. Today, the topic is we want to discuss information recovery. That is, we are going to throw a quantum state. So, a quantum state, I don't know, some your diary or whatever, to a black hole. Then we naively think that, it's forever there. So it's the safest way to hide your secret. But the question is, can we reconstruct it or not? Now I will try to address this question by using more like an information theoretic perspective. And also, ultimately, we are going to attack this problem by computing entropy or any two entropy and so on. So strictly speaking, we need to do these Hall integral again. But this time, I'm going to skip these Hall integral. And instead, I will just try to use some simple rule or which allow us to estimate this entanglement. Now the question is following. So we throw a quantum state into the black hole. So for but to the mind of a quantum information theorist, this problem just looks like this. So I have an initial state, initial diary that will be mixed with black hole's degree of freedom. Okay, then, then is n and then a. What are you doing? Right, I think it's gonna be three. Then I have output, and this is again a random unitary for now. And the time evolves, and at the end of the day, we will have output. And then this output C is the remaining black hole. And then D is the radiation. So our task is, by catching this Hawking radiation, we try to guess what was this psi in. Okay? And then by guessing, what we mean is that given this degree of freedom on D, we are allowed to apply some quantum operation, any quantum operation, let me call it just Q, such that this Q will output psi in. Okay? So if it's, some quantum operation. Now, of course, this quantum operation should not depend on psi in because it needs to be done under the condition that we do not know the initial state, but we still need to reconstruct the initial state. This is the problem setting. And if I write it in this way, it's completely a quantum mechanical problem. And now the claim for the central result is I have some answer written here, but I'm not sure if it's correct or not. So let me quickly check. I think it's correct. Yeah. So if ND, the number of radiation you catch, is basically larger than n plus na, where n is just so this is a total Hilbert space, then is possible. This is the claim. So it just says that after the page time, remember that page time is 1 over 2 times n. So slightly after the page time, we will be able to get the we will be able to reconstruct the quantum state.
So you say n is dimension or the number of qubits?
Number of qubits, yeah. So I will use d as the dimension, which is
and it's essentially a time count as well.
Yeah, it's essentially, yeah. Now, okay, but I want to prove this, and then we know how to compute entanglement entropy and so on, but we still don't know how to address such a question, like, can we reconstruct a quantum state or not? So how do we attack this kind of concrete question? For this, QI people came up with a very nice technique, which is called reference system. This is a nice trick to attack this kind of problem. So, of course, the question is, we have a fixed initial state, unknown fixed initial state, and we want to reconstruct it. But instead, they decided to attack the following problem. So it's only the initial, the same unitary operator and the same initial state of the black hole. But instead of considering psi in, we are going to consider EPL pairs here that's supported on A and A prime. Okay. So that is, you prepare EPL pairs, left hand side and right hand side. So EPL pair is, just to remind you, this thing, 00, 00, 11, so two sides are the same, essentially. And then, I'll put, anyway, a bunch of EPL pairs. We prepare a bunch of EPL pairs and then send only the right-hand side to the black hole, while you keep the other half to your reference. Then we catch radiation. So what's the point of introducing this reference system? It's because, strictly speaking, we need to study this problem for every possible initial state psi-ing, and then we need to consider the fidelity, like how well you can reconstruct the quantum state. But it's bit difficult to keep track of all the possible initial state. So by doing this trick of introducing reference system, so this is a reference system. Very intuitively speaking, this A prime essentially keeps track of all the possible by entangling with A. Okay. Now, maybe this is not clear enough, but just roughly the intuition is. Now, there's one important fact which can be actually rigorously proven, but I'm not gonna prove it in this lecture. But if A prime and D are nearly maximally entangled, entangled. Then some quantum operation Q acting on D. Is still EPR pairs, anyway, copy of them from apply and D. Okay. But this, we do some operation here, Q, without touching A or C, other parts at all. Then in the end, what we get is EPR sitting on A prime, A and D.
Can you explain more what you mean exactly with radiation acting on
D? So you just catch, these are, I say it's a radiation and so on, but these are really qubits. So you have an d qubits, and you are able to perform any, let's say, unitary operations on these d qubits. And then, so the idea is, since a prime and d are entangled with each other, so these are qubits, so each qubit of a prime should be entangled with some degree of freedom on this side, which is presumably contained in d, because a prime and d are entangled. But there exists some quantum operation which locate that degree of freedom and then distill and then localize that degree of freedom, and then it can give you a simple clean EPR pair. That is what we mean by.
And is the entanglement between A prime and D like just assumption, like given this?
Yeah.
But A prime and C could also be.
I should. Then yeah.
How do you define newly maximally entangled?
I will define it with words, or I'll write it. Okay. And hereby maximally entangled, it is based on mutual information, which I will mention later, but yeah. This question can be addressed by using mutual information. It's a von Neumann quantity. Okay, so this is nice because now you can distill EPR pairs, and in these conditions, actually this Q, it's actually achieve a very good average fidelity. Reconstruction fidelity. By reconstruction fidelity, I mean that we prepare possible initial state, and then we prepare our reconstructed quantum state, and then we just look at the overlap. If it's one, then it's a perfect reconstruction. If it's not one, smaller than one, then it's imperfect reconstruction. But we compute this reconstruction fidelity and then take an average over all initial state, and then it's still good. So by doing this trick, nice thing is that it's very difficult to compute what's the reconstruction fidelity for each state. But if I introduce these reference systems, I can easily compute the average reconstruction fidelity, and that can be done by simple entanglement calculations.
Is the first statement a probabilistic statement that there's a Q that does this distillation with high probability?
What does it mean? So is that, are you asking
it seems that somehow you're increasing the entanglement. If it's nearly maximally entangled but not maximally entangled, then you're applying some local operation to increase the entanglement. So
almost perfect, yeah. Nearly perfect, sorry, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry. So if it's perfectly maximally entangled, you can always distill perfect EPR pairs. But if it's nearly, then it's a nearly perfect EPR pair. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, we can't. Yeah, it's a local operation, so we can't increase the entanglement.
In this diagram, where is our psi in?
Psi in was here.
But
I can't study what happens for each psi in, so I just replaced it with EPR pair.
Yeah, but so then what are we averaging over all psi in here?
Oh, so right. So now I have this nice Q quantum operation which can distill EPR pairs.
Okay.
I take this Q and then use it there.
Okay.
And then, yeah, that's what I mean. So entanglement distillation and reconstruction of a quantum state is related, or they are essentially the same statement. Now another, so for this reason, we can convert this information theory, this question into this very entanglement calculation question. Nice. Yes.
I'm just still confused. If we're averaging over all possible states, then like, are we going to reconstruct like a maximally mixed state? Or?
Oh no. So like, I have psi in, and then I do some reconstruction. So let's say psi in. Okay. Then for every psi in, I have, prime or something. Then fidelity is essentially this guy. And I take an average of this quantity. All right. Now with this, I mentioned that what we need to do is we need to compute this mutual information, which I haven't really talked about, but I will do that in a moment. But what it means is like we just really need to compute entropies of subsystems. So this is like a three-party system, right? A prime, C, and D. So if we can compute entanglement entropy of A prime, C, D, and so on, then yeah, we are done essentially. Then since U is a half random unitary, what we should, strictly speaking, doing is we need to do the half integral and so on. But it's complicated, so I want to introduce some method, which is based on what we call minimal surfaces. Then, yeah, you can actually see a little bit of a flavor of a quantum gravity, LHCFT correspondence. So the motivation is using Hall integral formula is usually very complicated. It's difficult. So this is like a shortcut formula. Okay. But strictly speaking, of course, we need to do the serious Hall integral calculation to get the exact answer. But for many of the situations, this shortcut formula gives you the right answer, approximately. So now, how it works. So let me explain it first by examples. So first is the Page's theorem. Let's remember that we had this psi. This is a random state. Then we had these lines. These are qubits. Now let me draw these lines nicely in a way that, sorry for removing. So let me separate it nicely so that I can see the relation. So this is A degree of freedom and B degree of freedom. Then Page's theorem said that essentially SA, the entanglement entropy of A, is roughly equals to NA, the number of qubits on A, when NA is smaller than half. Now, looking at this formula, we notice that one way to get one possible rule to compute this result is, here we are interested in computing entanglement entropy of A. So what we can do is actually we think about a line that intersects these qubits, okay, or these tensors. And then there are two possible surfaces or line you can think about. So this is one possible line. The other possible line is this one. Okay. So here, what I'm doing is that I view this A as a boundary. Then I'm looking at another boundary which encloses the system to form a closed object, right? So this is A. So there are two possibilities. I do this, I do this. So then let me call these lines gamma 1 and gamma 2. Okay. Then we notice that gamma 1 cuts NA lines, okay? So this gives me like roughly the length of lambda, gamma 1 is NA. While gamma 2, it cuts N minus NA lines. So its length is like N minus NA. Then this formula is just as simple as this one. Okay. That is entanglement entropy of SA is just a minimal length that covers this A subsystem. So this mean is very important because when NA is smaller than this one, this case and you pick NA. But if this is larger than N over 2, and you would get okay. Is this okay? This formula, or like this kind of intuitive argument. I mean, so far I haven't tell you why this should be correct, but just empirically, it's always correct when it comes to like random systems and so on. Now, based on this minimal surface method, let's compute this recoverability of the information. Now, yeah, what we want to compute is the mutual information. Which is defined by the following quantity. I don't know, you are familiar with mutual information? Okay? Question?
It, just with the minimal surface, like I recall that we showed for the different times we get the different formulas for the entropy, but how do the surfaces come into play? Like, why are we
doing? Oh, yeah. So B, this is really a generic statement. We don't have any radiations and so on. It's just you pick a random quantum state over n qubits, and then our goal is to compute the entanglement entropy of the subsystem A. Then the empirical formula to compute the entropy is looking for a minimal surface. And by minimal surface, I mean I'm interested in entropy of A. So then I look like I have two possible ways to cover A region, two regions. And then I define the sort of length of this cup by number of cup legs that cut. And then this is shorter, then this is a number. If this blue line is shorter, then this should give you the entanglement. And then, yeah, this holds in most of the cases, and This can be actually shown in some examples. Now, I mean, of course, if you don't like this kind of shortcut formula, then the only choice is to do the serious hard random calculations. But I don't want to do the hard random calculation for this thing. So but you can do that. I mean, just in case I did that last night. And all right. Okay, so mutual information essentially computes the entanglement or correlation between A prime and D. And then its max value is, how should I write it? So it's upper bounded by 2 times S A prime. Well, this is something you can probably check or convince yourself. But 2NA is 2 times NA. So essentially, if you have EPR pair on A prime and D, then this mutual information becomes maximal. Maximal mutual information. All right. So that now we want to check that this A prime and D are nearly maximally entangled or not. To do that, I look at this diagram, and I extend psi BH to 0 because it's a random system. So any initial state is as random as this. So 0 is random, seen from how random unitary. Okay. Now we need to compute these 3 quantities, but as I already did, this quantity is just equals to NA because here A prime is part of the EPR pair, NA. So the 2 quantity we need to compute is these 2.
The S A prime is N A just because A prime is like a bipartite system. And
yes, yes, yes. And the entanglement doesn't change on the unitary. So let's compute S D. Then I want to look at the region which covers D. Okay, this is one possibility. But there is actually a situation, there could be a situation where when especially D is very, very large, this may be smaller. Oh, well, it may look big, but it turns out there are situations. So SD is roughly equals to minimum of the ND or NA plus SC. Okay. Then I can compute A prime D, which is, well, it's actually equals to SC because it's a pure state. Right. Then I want to compute SC. So first possibility is this guy, of course. And second possibility is go around this. And then SC is, I say it's equal, but it's really like approximately equal. More precisely speaking, this is NC, and then the other one is NA plus ND. So depending on the size of D, we will get 2 different values. But now, if ND is relatively large, especially larger than NA plus NC, then we actually, this automatically actually suggests that NA plus ND, see, goes up. ND is already larger than robot. Am I correct? Minus NA. Yeah. I mean, you just subtract NA from this one. Then this should follow. So in this situation, you have okay, of course. As a result, if you compute this quantity, you get maximal, and of course it's nearly maximal. So get this result. So if this is true, actually, I should probably use blue one. Oh, okay, it doesn't correspond. If this is the case, then it turns out the mutual information becomes nearly maximum. It's kind of interesting because it's the time where so initially when D is very, very small, you should be picking this surface. But when D is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger, then the minimal surface jumps to this blue line. And that's a time where your information becomes maximal. And if you massage this quantity, ND larger than NA plus NC, by using N is conserved, like NC plus ND is equal to N and so on, then you get the one I wrote.
So do we mean an A, or is the A prime?
So right. So this is a criteria for reconstruction possibility. But we can use this. So I just put NC equals to N minus ND here. And then yeah. So
I think the question is about the size of A prime.
Sorry, size of what?
Yeah.
So A and A prime are the same size because A prime is defined by EPR
pairs
today. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes. NA and NA prime are the same. Okay. Now, of course, you can do this calculation by using Hall integrals. And that's actually a very important exercise because we need to show that there is a subleading term, and the subleading term should be suppressed as n becomes larger than this quantity. That's something you can show. All right, so that's the kind of the way you can discuss the recoverability of the information. So it's a very vague question, right? You throw a diary into the black hole, and then can I reconstruct it later or not? But by using this reference system trick, that EPR pair trick, you can address this question very easily. And this reference system trick appears, I think, like almost everywhere when you want to really discuss information loss puzzle seriously. This is something you will see very often.
Here, mm-hmm. We use the trick just to get
the right Q. Oh, right. So. So okay. Yeah. So there are two things. First is, what I showed today is it is possible to reconstruct the information. And then this statement proves that there exists such Q. Okay. But constructing such Q is another problem. And I haven't discussed like anything about how difficult it is to construct such Q. Then generically in this kind of setup, we believe that it's very difficult, but under some conditions, actually in some black holes, it's actually relatively easy to come up with like easily implementable Q operations. So there are two questions. So this is an existence proof of the recovery method. So there's another important problem we haven't addressed, that is how to construct Q.
And also, I thought when we were discussing the Bayes toy model, that was, yeah. Feature of toy model was keeping the U random. But mm-hmm. The
Yeah. So it turns out that the black hole U is of course not random, but it has a little bit more structure. So actually, like constructing Q is actually a bit easier than doing random. Mm-hmm. But the belief is like all these calculations should hold for actual black hole. And I'm gonna actually discuss that. Like it's actually indeed possible in actual black hole dynamics. Okay. So but really the reason why I did this minimal surface trick is I wanted to show you that this is actually kind of related to gravity. So because maybe many of you may have heard of the something called Liu-Takayanagi formula. Which I hope that this will be explained by Bruno more carefully. But if we go to the hyperbolic space, I cannot draw hyperbolic space, but that is like in the exterior, it's more dense, but the interior, it becomes less dense. That's the geometry. Then if we look at the region A, subsystem A, then we know that its entanglement, of course, you can draw a bit like lots of different lines. But it turns out that its entropy, SA, is known to be proportional to gamma A. A is the geodesic. Yeah. So it's kind of, it has this flavor of this minimal surface formula coming from how random states. And in fact, this kind of transition happens if you think about two subsystems, A1 and A2. Then I have two possible minimal surfaces candidate. This is one possibility. But there's another possibility. So, yeah. In this case, it's known that entropy is minimum of this is the gamma. The gamma prime, gamma or gamma prime, whichever the shortest should give you the entanglement entropy. So what's very interesting is like if you fix the size of A1 and then you make A2 bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and eventually there is a transition from this orange line to blue line, sudden transition. There is this transition. Surface. And in this page theorem example, I also show that there is a kind of a transition of the minimal surface. So if we look at the page curve, there is this point where this curve starts, this line starts to change the behavior suddenly. So this is the usually the location where you see a sudden transition of the minimal surfaces. Like there are two local minimas, but one of them suddenly becomes more dominant, and so on. It turns out that this is essentially how you can derive the page curve in ADS-CFT correspondence, and these are the important development we have seen in the past few years in a very, very simplified language. I mean, it's actual calculations even more difficult than these calculations, but yeah, that's essentially what's going on. Okay. All right, so that's why I thought introducing this shortcut formula would be nice. And then hopefully it may convince you that this power random calculation is not as bad as this mathematical trick, right? All right, so from a technical viewpoint, this is all I wanted to convey you, but there's one conceptual thing I still want to cover. Yeah.
One question, is there a relation between the geodesic and the geodesic being the shortest path and the minimal surface being the smallest surface?
Yes. It's basically, I said it's minimal surface because this form, so first is, I said surface is because this can be applied in higher dimensions as well. So higher dimension, it's minimal area. And then, but yeah, I mean, here you can define the area or length by the number of cut of the length. So you can assume like this each pencil leg as like a, I don't know, Planck size thing that gives you one area, one qubit. That's how you can. And for some reason, gravity wants to pick the minimal one. Right. So now this is just a calculation, but one important conceptual thing is you can already learn is a quantum error correcting code. So this idea of quantum code appears many times in this lecture. So I want to just give you a little bit of introduction, or just you know, brief mention of this concept. I will come back to this concept many times later. But so the problem we looked at was following. There's a unitary, which was a random unitary. And then I have a fixed initial state. See, this is black hole's initial state. And then I have a secret diary. Then there is an output. But in the language of quantum error correcting code, what's happening here is you have n a qubit input state that you want to encode. Encode means like you want to hide. You encoding. Then after the encoding, what you have is a quantum state on n qubit, right? Which I may just write it as a big psi, a function of psi in. So what I did in a very simplified language is I prepared n-way qubit input system, and I mixed it with some other initial state with this unitary, and I have this n qubit output state. Now, the reason why I say this is a quantum error correcting code is because suppose we lose all qubits on C. That is like you are doing this experiment, but you ask this experiment to a very bad experimentalist, so he or she lost qubits on C. That's very bad. And then, but still, if NC is not that big, especially smaller than, well, n minus NA over 2, then we can still deconstruct psi in from D, right? Okay. That's pretty good because you can actually lose almost half of the qubits, but still your information is still there. That's a very good error correcting code. So here, by error means that this is the something called erasure error. So in this sense, what we are talking about here is just a problem of quantum error correction. That is, can we reconstruct the initial state under the error? And it turns out in this case, this erasure is a remaining black hole, right? Because things inside the black hole, you can't really access. So it's as good as erased or lost. So that is the one perspective. Now, okay, this is just an interpretation, but I want to talk about one interesting kind of duality relations in a quantum error correcting code. So I said that if you have more than half of the quantum state, then you can reconstruct the initial state. But if you have less than half of the state, then you can't reconstruct the state, right? So it seems like, again, like if you have C or D separations, it looks like if D can reconstruct your initial state, the C cannot reconstruct your state. If C is big and C can reconstruct the initial state, then D cannot. It seems like there is an interesting trade-off. And then this trade-off is usually called in different names, but coding theory people call it cleaning lemma. More Shannon theory people call it monogamy of entanglement. Now let me just, this lemma is really simple, and I don't know why we should really call it lemma. It's so simple. But okay. So this is the situation. This is the error correcting code. I have used the reference system trick. And then there is one fact which, I mean, you should be able to prove it very easily in 1 minute. But the mutual information between A prime and C, you take a sum with mutual information between D, then it turns out this is always equals to 2 times S A prime, which is in this case 2 and A. Okay. Now, I mean, you just put definitions of mutual information that you will get. Now, why this is interesting is, of course, if D reconstructs psi in, which is essentially same as is nearly equals to 2 times an A, right? Okay. But this is essentially equivalent to saying that C cannot reconstruct because mutual information between A prime and C is nearly equals to zero. Okay. So when we say we can reconstruct a quantum state from D, then the equivalent statement is that we cannot reconstruct that quantum state from C. It's just a same statement, actually.
In this situation, what is called the error correcting code?
Mm-hmm.
It's called the error correcting code.
Yeah. So generically, more generically, the setup is like I have a set of initial state psi in, and then that we are promised that this psi in comes with some probability, but we don't know which one will be coming, and then the goal is later, we want to reconstruct the initial state psi in. So that is the problem of the quantum error correcting code. And then, so this is the encoding of the quantum error correcting code. That is, I have a NVA qubit system, and I'm embedding it into a bigger Hilbert space. That is N qubit Hilbert. Now then, given this encoded, this big size state, there will be some form of errors to this system. This error could be, in this case, loss of qubits. There may be another type of errors, like maybe someone comes and they apply Pauli Z operator somewhere. That's one possibility. Many kinds of possible errors. But still, if this amount of errors are small, then there is a hope that we can still reconstruct the initial state type in. Now, again, this question could be asked for each specific initial state, but we usually use this trick of enlarging the Hilbert space and then putting entangled state. And then if we do that, then yeah, it's just the question is a question of the entanglement.
And why is this called cleaning lemma?
Oh yeah, cleaning is like cleaning is it's when you apply this result to quantum error correcting code context, well, like this one, then what we know is like, suppose like for some reason you can prove, you are able to prove that there is absolutely not it's absolutely not possible to reconstruct the initial state from C region, then you can essentially clean out this C region from your consideration, and then you are promised that you can reconstruct the initial state from D. Then that's why it's cleaning C. I know it's a strange name. Well, I was one of the first person who applied this result to coding theory and screening lemma. So I'm part of the one to be blamed. yeah, so that's why. And I don't know if you are familiar with quantum error correcting code and stabilizer code. It's actually your expression of logical operator. If you have a support on C region, you can clean it from C region. So that's the reason why we call it lemma. Another perspective on this thing is monogamy, no cloning theorem. That's because suppose both C and D reconstruct, suppose, then what we have essentially is that the psi in can be copied, two of them, right? But this is not good. Violation. So again, if she can reconstruct psi in, then she, two regions cannot reconstruct the same quantum. So this thing we have seen so far is just, this cleaning lemma or monogamy of entanglement, or it's a kind of version of the no cloning. All right, so that's probably it for today. So let me just briefly recap. So what we have done so far is, information recovery program. We throw our secret diary to a black hole, and then someone wants to reconstruct it. And then this problem can be discussed by using mutual information by using this reference system trick. And then there is a cheating way to compute entanglement. That's a minimal surface. It's not just a cheat. It has a nice relation to ADS-CFT correspondence. And then these physics can be interpreted as a quantum error correcting code. And then underlying thing is that there is a very deep, simple but deep physics that is a monogamy of entanglement. All right, so that's probably it for today. Okay, thanks.